This is Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is James Helsing, who is, and I'm going to let him fill it in just a minute, but you write and produce and direct, and you said this is new to you. So start in with what you did before and anything you'd like to share in that line.
Well, for years I was a researcher behind the scenes in entertainment television.
Oh.
On shows like Entertainment Tonight and the Emmys and...
What do researchers do? I never realized there were those.
They take the complaints, and I don't know how animated I can be with my words on this show.
Oh,
but
anything at all.
Oh, yes, okay.
The more the better.
They take all the bullshit and bitching from everybody else on the show, unless you happen to get on a really great crew when people take more responsibility for their actions.
You mean when people who are temperamental... Is that...
That's being very kind, but yeah, that captures the essence of what I'm saying, yes.
So you take the complaints of the performers?
No, there's very little direct communication with talent. They're called talent on shows.
Yes.
This is more dealing with producers and directors, and there are some lovely producers and directors as well.
You're going to be one.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Not in entertainment television, though, the experience
of
the movies.
Go ahead, I'm interested in this. So what do you do as a research?
Well, in research, one is given a script, or rather one collaborates with a director on, say, a show like Entertainment Tonight, for instance, which I worked on for years. And ideally, one works in a collaborative sort of fashion with that director. And finding facts, answering questions, doing research. Often there's a press release that is provided. Sometimes, rarely, but sometimes one has a direct connection with the person you're writing the story about.
Oh, I see. So, yes. Okay, so for those who may not know, I mean, I've just been reminded now, but for those who may not know, tell us what Entertainment Tonight is about. I'm sure everyone on the planet has seen it.
Entertainment Tonight, sometimes affectionately known as E.T.,
yes,
not the
course.
Extraterrestrial.
Yes, no, E.T., yes, right. The I other see that on the E.T. scroll down a lot.
Exactly.
Yes, of course.
It's updating the world on what's happening in plastic surgery and the scandals and who said that to who. And sometimes there's juicy stories here and there about movies and television.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. So then you did that for years, and what...
Yes.
What happened next?
I got laid off.
Oh, okay.
But I treasure my time there. It was a wonderful experience. I met some fabulous people, many of whom I'm still in touch with, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. It was very
nice.
Educational.
Now, just to back up a little, how did you enter into that? I mean, what was your... As a child, what was your goal? What did you think you wanted to be when you grew up?
Well, I wanted to be, at one time, a member of the Partridge Family.
Oh, okay. So you were television influenced growing up. Okay,
yes.
That's what I'm after. I was curious about that.
But more so movie-wise, the experience of the movies had more of a profound effect on me, and I think that helped to lay the ground.
Okay, so what movies and what effect, may I ask?
Well, I suppose the first film I ever saw was... a movie from 1939 called The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, my goodness, of course.
But not on the big screen, on a little black and white TV.
Oh.
So there was no color. I didn't even get the whole sepia effect in the Kansas sequences.
Oh, in the beginning. Oh,
yes.
Sure.
It wasn't shot in black and white.
Did you know they were red shoes?
No, but I heard they were ruby slippers, yes. That eventually came when I finally did see it on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, absolutely.
What touched you about that? Of course, what wouldn't? But you say.
Oh, gosh. The performances, of course, the beautiful music, the production value, and all of those different artistic entities made a real impression on me. I didn't know at the time. I wasn't sitting there as a 4 or 5 year old saying, oh, yes, the production values are quite stunning, and oh, the Yellow Brick Road, and. The talking trees, those are really actors inside, and that's really...
Did it make you want to be there?
Well, not in the tornado sequences. That scared the hell out of me.
Or the flying monkeys.
Or the flying monkeys, yes, which are still very scary
Aren't they?
Up today.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So that movie had a profound influence on me. And also the Marx Brothers and Laurel and Hardy. And
so you really went for the... classics.
I did, yes. Mm-hmm. They struck more of a chord with me, watching them on a little black and white TV. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a color TV growing up. So that speaks to the artistry of those involved and how brilliant they were. And that's what I strive to be in my work.
So when did that take form with you?
Very early. We're talking about the 20th century, of course.
Yes, right.
Yes, when film was still very young. But I would watch these movies. I would record them off the TV. I would memorize the dialogue.
Really?
I would just listen to them over and over again. And that's how I got them into my DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And some films I could recite by
Oh,
by
I've got
heart.
Some of those, too. I could certainly lip sync.
Yes.
Yes, I've got a lot of those. But when did that take you into a job? Or through school or something? When did you find that was your direction?
Well, I did quite a bit of theater in school from a very young age, with the focus being acting. Mm-hmm. And then I got into directing and producing. This was still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And then that carried through into university and graduate school, university in San Francisco, which is how I got to know the great city of San Francisco.
Oh, yes, because you're – okay, you can talk about your project that – takes place there, that mystery that is scary enough.
Oh, thank you very much.
Might as well have flying monkeys.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was terrifying. Okay, go ahead.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful compliment.
Get into that.
Okay.
Okay.
And so I got to know San Francisco, which is one gigantic film set after all, and that's Hitchcock country and many other beautiful mm-hmm. movies have shot there. And then my last semester at university, I flew down to Universal City, the studios, and I auditioned for London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, mm-hmm. better known as Lambda, mm-hmm. and I got in. So I moved to England after that, and that was a glorious year. It was a program specifically geared towards students overseas,
mm-hmm.
and I call it theatrical boot camp. Very little sleep, lots of scene study, Rife and Dagger. We were tested by the Society of British Fight Directors to get our fight certificates
mm-hmm.
and had some absolutely...
Fight certificates.
Yes, Rife and Dagger.
Yes, yes.
Something you'd see.
I met somebody recently, actually. She was a guest on Love Letters, and she was a combat stunt woman.
Oh.
Yes, and there's a whole school of that in L.A. I'm sure you would know that.
Ah, yes.
And it's essentially a choreography school. I mean, that stuff's very highly...
Oh, there's quite a bit of choreography.
Mm-hmm.
I bet she had some wonderful pointers for you, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so that was a phenomenal experience, mm-hmm. and I carry that with me to this day, 30
okay.
years later.
And when did you – so you got laid off, and that was a couple of years ago?
That was about 5 years ago, yes. And ever since then, I decided at that time the layoff was a sign from – the movie gods telling me, okay, you've done that. That chapter can now be closed. Now you need to focus on your true love, which is filmmaking and everything that is associated with that, producing, directing.
Was that scary?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, good.
It wasn't. Even the bumps in the road for this first short film, which were very few because I surrounded myself with greatness in front of the camera and behind, It was a joy, and I don't mind bumps in the road. It makes you stronger. It builds
good
character.
For you.
But for this experience, they were few and far between.
And you're
really.
Even-tempered, I'm guessing. You seem to be.
Yes, I am, damn it.
For the whole 12 minutes that I've known you, you seem
yes.
Not even that, 8 and a half, yes.
It takes a lot to push me over the edge.
Sometimes people are, it can be scary. You know, you do something that you like, but it's safe, and you stay there, and then you get... As my daughter once said, I was in a similar kind of situation, she said, you know, Mommy, sometimes you just need to be shoved out of the womb.
That's perfectly true.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
But then you must have had some time where you had to think of...
Well, in my screenwriting especially, I like to be unsafe. That is, a couple of my favorite expressions are think outside the box
mm-hmm.
and also reinvent the wheel. And I don't know how many times I've rewritten my feature screenplays that I work on a
now
daily basis.
You have that in plural. You said screenplays.
Yes, yes. I like to jump around in various genres.
So you have several waiting for you to produce. Is that what that means?
They are waiting to be have them. My grammar is not good at this particular moment. They are waiting to jump off the page and onto the screen.
Okay, that's perfectly well put.
Yes.
And that's all in your hands.
Well, sometimes it's in one's hands. Sometimes it's out of one's hands. It really depends on who you're dealing
with.
But
you're the one.
I'm the one, yes.
So it's in your hands or out of your hands. It's still your hands.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
And you just start from scratch to produce. You have to do what?
Well,
what's your first step?
With the short, money helps. Financing certainly helps.
Because you have to hire?
Because you have to hire actors. Because one wants to go through SAG-AFTRA.
Sure.
Of course, there are non-union projects. There are wonderful films that are made with actors who are not in the union and by filmmakers who use their camera.
I heard somebody, you know Joshua Tate?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, he is also a filmmaker. And he was talking, and I was curious the same thing, and I forget that now people go to school and you learn how to do things. As opposed to 1920 when people had to make it up out of whole cloth. But apparently you can make a whole movie on an iPhone.
That's absolutely true.
It's so amazing and shocking.
Yes. I haven't had that experience, but I applaud anyone who does. Uh-huh. And there are Oscar-winning filmmakers who will tell you, in today's day and age of technology, use your phone. Make a 15-second film. Make a 60-second film. That's a movie.
So start somewhere.
Start somewhere, yes. And then years from that point of production, you can look back and you can say, hey, you know, I went for it. Yes. I took a risk. I was unsafe. I didn't listen to any ne'er-do-wells who might have creeped into my existence.
Do people tend to do that?
I think when there's perhaps something that's viewed as a daunting task, like making, in their eyes, a feature film, hence the daunting task in their eyes.
Does sound like it.
There's a tendency to perhaps not be as positive as one would think and be more on the negative side. But those are individuals.
But it's not their business anyway.
No, it's not. And they usually were speaking from a point of perhaps ignorance or naivete, and that can sometimes come from people in the industry. I've encountered industry people who read my feature script and say, well, this is never going to work
Okay, so there's a man named, what's his name? He's wonderful. I think it's Seth Stevenson, Sean Stevens, something Stevens. And he's wonderful, and he said, I saw a video of a talk he gave, and he said, never accept any prediction that does not empower you.
Those are words for the wise and from the wise, absolutely. Yes, I believe you have to stick to your vision, stick to your dream, and surround yourself with people who believe in you. And if you encounter somebody at a party, at a coffee house, you happen to have a conversation with about your project, and they're not supportive or they perhaps try and talk you out of it, just take it in and then say, oh, well, thank you very much and have a nice life.
Right. Take it in and say goodbye. Really?
Yes.
What do you need that for?
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
It also shows a lack of imagination.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Who needs that? Okay, talk about your film that you did make that you shot in San Francisco. You want to talk about that story?
Well, it was actually shot in the Valley in Van Nuys at a wonderful little sort of ma and pa studio.
Oh, but your opening was all that fog.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I see. Okay.
Yes. It takes place in San Francisco.
Yes. I got fooled.
Yes.
Because that's what movies are supposed to do, right?
Well, thank you very much. Yes. The modern day story takes place in San Francisco, and it's a murder mystery. Everybody loves a good mystery. And like I said, San Francisco was one gigantic film set. And we have the opening, which is not in San Francisco, but addresses several historic murders. We open in the East End of London in the autumn of 1888, during the time of someone called Jack the Ripper.
And he just stays terrifying.
He does.
There's no finishing with that one, is there?
No, he has staying power. He's like the Energizer Bunny of Victorian London. The Energizer Bunny with a big, sharp Liston knife.
Is that because it was never really solved? So there's still mystery about it?
Yes, it wasn't formally solved, but there were those in the upper echelon of the Scotland Yard who knew exactly who it was.
Oh,
but
really?
I don't think we'll ever know who it was.
Why wouldn't we? Why don't they say? I know for a long time I used to hear that it was really Somerset Maugham. Did you ever hear that?
No, this is the first time I've heard that. Mm-hmm. I think that
so
is...
mean.
Yes, yes. But we can forgive that. We've also heard Oscar Wilde and the author of Alice in Wonderland, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Oh, yes, of course.
Which is all...
Lewis Carroll.
Yes, Lewis Carroll.
Oh, but sure.
That's one of the Wilde theories.
But they're also...
out there.
Oh, because they're picking people who have kind of odd lives when it comes to... Yes.
Exactly. And who
flamboyant
were around at that time, flamboyant.
Sexually different.
Yes. Perhaps who themselves thought outside the box, who were reinventing the wheel and taking risks, this whole notion of taking risks. And so I don't think we'll ever know, even though every couple of years you see an article in a British newspaper that says, well, I've discovered who the Ripper was, and there's no other theory. This is the be-all and the end-all. And I just sort of you take it in and like, and
okay. Well, so go, I didn't mean to distract you, but go back to your movie plot.
Well, it opens in Whitechapel in the East End of London, and we get to know, albeit briefly, the fifth and final victim of the Ripper, Mary Kelly, who, shall we say, went to pieces in her room in Miller's Court in Whitechapel.
No, she was actually Jack the Ripper's victim.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't remember that.
Ripperologists will tell you that there was a canonical five women who were known as prostitutes.
Yes.
And then after Mary Kelly's murder, which was Jack the Ripper's coup d'etat because of the violence involved.
Oh, worse than the others, you mean?
Oh, horrible. Yeah,
oh, okay.
I mean, literally just ripped apart.
Oh, hence the Ripper.
Yes, exactly.
I'm a little slow.
That's okay, all right. Though that title did not come from the Ripper himself. That came from the newspapers of the time who wanted to sell papers.
Sure.
I mean, and think that's a brilliant name, Jack the Ripper. Jack was a very common name at that point, so they used that so that people could relate to something.
Oh, of course. They didn't even know his first name. Right.
Yes.
And so, Somerset Ripper just doesn't sound right.
No, it just doesn't have that ring to it.
Yeah. No. Okay. And so then, your final.
Right. And then we segue into the autumn of 1892 in Fall River, Massachusetts. And we come to the house of Andrew and Abby Borden and their daughter, Lizzie. And we revisit the circumstances of that morning in which the father, Andrew Borden, and his wife, Lizzie's stepmother, were axed to death, the mother 19 times, the father 11 times, the famous nursery rhyme.
Mm-hmm. Not so, right?
Not so. Okay. Lizzie Borden took an axe,
gave her mother 40 whacks.
When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. No, it has a wonderful ring to it, but it has no historical value to it. And then we segue into 1947, Los Angeles, and we visit the murder of Elizabeth Short, better known as the Black Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, I had the privilege of becoming friendly with a gentleman who is a former LAPD detective, homicide inspector, named Steve Hodell. And he wrote these wonderful, gripping page-turner books called Black Dahlia Avenger, and its sequel, Black Dahlia Avenger 2. And he proved through exhaustive research that his father, the late Dr. George Hodell, was indeed the killer of Elizabeth Short. And he spells it all out in this incredible research. And the book was on the New York Times bestseller list, and I haven't I haven't approached him to be the technical advisor on the Black Dahlia sequence, but I hope to have that conversation with him in the not too distant future, because he really is the world's foremost authority on the Black Dahlia mystery. And I've also been in touch with the world's foremost authority on the Jack the Ripper murders, not Jack himself at a seance, of course, but Donald Rumbelow, who is London-based and also hosts many of the wonderful walking tours through Whitechapel. And, of course, I also want to have an expert on the Lizzie Borden murders as well.
Is there?
So, oh, yes. They're based in Fall River, largely at the Fall River Historical Society, and there is... there's no end to the wonderful detail that absolutely must be in each of those sequences.
Was she exonerated?
She was tried and acquitted, and nobody else was ever charged with the two axe murders. And so did she or didn't she? It's a real whodunit. But I base my sequence on actual court transcripts and what the medical examiner had to say. And the maid was also in the house that morning.
Yeah.
And she gave testimony. So everything that I write to in the Borden sequence and then testimony from those who were in Whitechapel that terrible night, I think if we're retelling something from history, we shouldn't take any liberties. And so I'm very specific with my research. And for
you come from research.
Exactly.
Mean, you're used to that, of
course. That's where that experience of years and years really helped. And nowadays we have the internet. Libraries are wonderful, but I think most people don't take advantage, sadly, of libraries. But they're there, and there's a lot of information to be had as well.
Where can we see this movie?
This movie, the short film called Modus Operandi, can be found on my YouTube channel, which is Lombard Street Flickers. And if you log on to that on YouTube, you'll see not only that film, but the making of the short film. And I can't take any credit for that. That was done by a wonderful filmmaker named Seth Schulman, who cut it all together and conducted the interviews with the cast and some of the crew members, my behind-the-scenes wizards, as I call them. So that's Seth's baby, even though I am interviewed in it as well. And then the short film, which is actually what we call a sizzle reel, which helps to generate interest amongst name talent and financiers, and that's where I am with this project now, going after names and also...
So what will you do if it goes exactly your way?
I'll probably do a wonderful dance.
and after that?
And then take some friends out to dinner at a pricey restaurant, and then start the process of building the cast and crew.
And so, but I guess my question is, this will be for mainstream theaters, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what I would be going for, distribution in mainstream theaters.
It's so complicated, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I look at movies now, and whereas it used to be in the days that you were talking about, you'd have a director and a producer and maybe the composer and a few of the actors. Most people went uncredited, which is not really fair, of course.
Right.
But now, even a such-and-such movie by this one, distributed by that, there's so many steps. It is so complicated.
It is.
And you have to coordinate all that.
Yes, and that's why it's important to surround oneself with greatness, people who have been doing it for years. Yeah. Great actors, great director of photography, a.k.a. DP, great AD, assistant director, designers, choreographers.
And that's all in the hands of the producer.
Largely so, but hopefully the director and the producer have a good relationship and the director can influence and make suggestions.
Okay, so then once you're finished, you have to find a distribution company to get it to the theaters? Is that how that works?
Yes, that might even happen before one even goes into production or even during production.
Oh, somebody's waiting for it, 'cause I can see it'll be...
Yes.
Uh-huh, sure, that makes sense.
It's all different for each particular film, and this would be my first feature, and I don't have that under my belt yet. I just have this short film and some other films from my past as well.
I'm going to be so eager to see what you do because you have such a good and serious feel to you.
Oh, well, thank you
like
very
that.
Much. Thank you. I'm also looking forward to it.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yes.
I'm glad. Oh, okay. I'm happy to hear about this and happy to know what you do. Let me ask you a question because I am about love letters. Do you write letters?
I do. I do.
Just curious how people are these days.
I take advantage of electronic mail.
Sure.
Of course. But I still write letters.
Because handwriting, you know.
Yes, yes.
King.
Yes. And I think it's nice to especially send off birthday cards, people's birthdays and anniversaries.
Do you have a pile of them yourself that people have sent you? Do you tend to keep them?
I do.
Sure,
I do,
think everybody does.
I've corresponded for years with an actress in London, who's also a dame of the British Empire, Eileen Atkins, who was for quite some time attached to the feature version of Modus Operandi.
Okay.
And a few years ago, I went to London, and we went to lunch in Piccadilly, London, and were there for 2 hours talking about the project, and she told me wonderful stories about working with Robert Altman and the series she co-created back in the 70s called Upstairs, Downstairs.
Oh, sure.
And Anthony Minghella and Peter Yates.
I love him.
Yes.
Oh, there is nothing that man didn't touch that I just didn't swoon over.
Yes, he was wonderful. He left us way too soon.
Oh, my
too.
Goodness. That really was a heartbreaker for me.
Yes. Yeah. His work was so
goodness.
Artistic.
Oh. Talk about movies that I could recite. The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, isn't that brilliant?
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That's got him all over it. And I don't like violence, but somehow...
It was appropriate
it
for
was
that character.
It was necessary for
yes.
that. Yes.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Even the way it starts with the music, Lullaby for Cain.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the whole thing's heartbreaking. Okay, this is not about my heartbreak. So let's get back to you.
A great movie will have these two invisible hands
yes.
come out from the silver screen and scoop you up, like you're being scooped up by the hands of greatness
yes. Yes.
in front of the camera and
yes.
behind.
Yes.
And that's what I...
Oh, in front of the camera and behind it, but you don't want to know there's a behind it when you're watching it.
Right.
Let
you
me
don't...
just say.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'd say one of the most challenging things about directing is not directing. One of the most challenging aspects of acting is not acting. One doesn't yes. want to call attention to oneself.
Yes.
But ultimately, when you have aficionados of film and audience members who become fans of that particular film, they can't help but take it apart and dissect it.
Well, that's okay, but I know that I have on occasion watching a movie said to myself and to my husband, I can see the cameras grinding, let's go home.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that I yes. think that happens quite often, mm-hmm. whether you're looking at a classic or yeah. a modern-day film. But
then sometimes you don't, and it's perfect.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh.
you get swallowed up into the experience of that film and that world, and sometimes those worlds are even recreated, like the wizarding world of Harry Potter. You step into Hogwarts and Diagon Alley, and depends on what identifies with the audience.
I have a thought for you, which I think about, and it's looking down the line, way down the line, and I know that what you do is so involved with the immediate, but, you know, you're part of a certain history. You're part of entertainment history. You're part of filmmaking. You're going to be part of writing. And wouldn't it be nice to leave a little bit of a trail in your own handwriting? And let somebody find those letters in 100 years and get a nice PhD out of it in something.
Well, it's funny you say that. I have never kept a diary. I've never kept
letters.
A journal. Letters? Yes. Especially if they happen to speak to the experience of what I personally identify with as an artist.
So who would you write to right now if you had to do one right now?
Who would I write to right now? Mm-hmm. Living or dead?
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't
good
matter.
Boy.
Okay. Well... Who would I write
to? Are we going
to
have Dear Jack?
well, it's funny. Before I answer your question, one conversation I have had with a higher power quietly over the years is when my time comes, I would like to be taken to Whitechapel, 1888, and I would like to know who Jack was. I'd also like to know if Oswald pulled the trigger in Dallas that day. I'd like to know if Lizzie Borden did really wield
that axe.
So you're
really dancing on the edge of being a detective yourself.
I probably would have made a very good detective.
Oh, really? I could see that.
Yes.
Yes.
But writers, screenwriters especially, have to be detectives because you don't want the audience to get lost. At the same time, you don't want so much information out there on screen that it becomes muddled.
Right.
You don't want them strolling around in mud. And so... But that's at the end of my journey. Speaking to your question, who would I write a letter to? I would write a letter to my younger self.
Oh, nice.
Yes. And I would say thank you for taking all those risks, for putting yourself out there.
I hope you'll specify them.
Well...
For future generations.
For future generations, yes. I would speak to the bullies. in my life.
Oh, good.
I would reference them. There were quite a few. In starting around fourth grade is when, at least speaking to my own experience, when kids started becoming nasty.
That's when they, that's so sad.
Kindergarten, first, second, and third grade were really magical.
Oh.
But then when I came back to fourth grade, that's when kids started getting nasty. But that experience, fourth grade through, I'd say, eighth grade, because after that I got to high school, and that's when kids started growing up and having different priorities, getting into sports, hormones started raging more, so they were had their eye on this person or that and didn't care about being a bully. All of that experience, miserable as it was oftentimes, I would say thank you for allowing that character to be built within inside me.
Okay, so there's a whole other wrinkle, is the love letter to the bully.
Yes, and it would be painful.
Anyway, whatever, sure, they're not always easy.
No, no.
Nor should they be.
No, as is the case with the bullies themselves, yes.
So leaving, you know, leaving a whole trail of your life, you mail them to yourself, and then you read them, and you find that the you who wrote them and the you who read them are two different people. But also, just leave them in a treasure box. Let somebody find them in 50 years. Think what a pile of gold that'll be for somebody else.
Yes, a time capsule, as it were.
Yes.
That's a very enchanting idea.
You should, I think. Okay. So thank you for doing this with me. I'm so happy we met.
Thank you so much for having me.
Just eagerly, I'll be in line for the movies. Thank
you. I'll look forward to seeing
you. And you're right, everybody loves a good mystery.
That's perfectly
And murder
true.
Is fascinating.
Yes, it is.
Horrible, but it does have a pull.
And it sadly still happens today
all
the time.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, sure.
Yes, and sometimes they're not caught, sometimes they are.
Right. Well, thank you, dear.
Thank you very much for your time.
So this is Janet Gallen and James Helsing saying goodbye for now, and I'll talk to you later. And remember that if you think you need to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, there is one just waiting for you. All you have to do is grab it. Bye.